let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this month by our fabulous friends at the Dolphin Theatre. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Tonight we catch up with the fabulous singer-songwriter Em. We're chatting with a young teen fundraising for her move to Brisbane to study the arts. We're heading to Wellington to catch up with Nino about their show The Boy Whose Mother Was a Pirate, and author Jenny Lynch is back to chat about her latest book. But to kick off the show, here is a Christmas track from Lou Fay's latest album with a bit of Santa Claus Is Coming to Town.
Ho, ho, ho. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, checking it twice, he's gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming. Toy drums, Rudy toot toots and rummy tum tums. Santa Claus is coming to town. And curly haired dolls that cuddle and coo, elephant boats and kitty cars too. Santa Claus is coming to town. The kids in girl and boy land. Christmas tree. Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to
Emma, are you on the naughty list or the nice list? Is Santa visiting your house this year?
Well, I put the Christmas tree up, so hopefully.
You're one up on me. I looked at my list for the next few weeks of functions and thought, actually, none of them are at my apartment, so I'm not doing it.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Santa might skip me. Have you had a good week? You've had a busy week like me?
Yeah, it has been. Well, it's kind of wrapping everything up, isn't it? So kind of last lessons. I had students both in the South Island and the North Island doing music exams, musical theatre exams and acting exams on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then last night was our Stage Antics Showcase and Awards Night, which is always a big one to organise.
Kind of feels like the end of the year when you start doing the end awards. We had our graduations this week for all our cadets at work, and yes, that same sort of wind down feeling, ticking those last things off.
It's quite nice.
But it hasn't gone quiet out in the theatre world. There's still lots of things happening in theatre and music and entertainment right up to Christmas.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I kind of think in the olden days,
no.
I feel like people wouldn't go out to the theatre the week of Christmas.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so much on the week of Christmas even. It's crazy.
You and I are booked to go for our Kick Arts Christmas party at Dynamotion.
I know. I'm so excited. I hope the guys have organised our little tickets there. It's going to be great.
It's going to be good fun. Good fun. Now, we did promote today a different artist on our show, but unfortunately he wasn't well, so we've postponed him and brought in a fabulous guest for you all tonight, and a big welcome to Em.
Kia ora, how are you going?
We are going well. Thank you so much for stepping in to chat all about your wonderful music. Delighted to have you here. Tell us, first of all, when did music sort of kick off in your world?
Oh, very young.
Yeah?
I did grow up as a songwriter.
Okay.
I did not really play any music or anything like that. I really just wrote for a very long time. And then at the end of high school, I went and studied audio engineering and music production.
Okay.
And so that ended up kind of being my life passion. I really enjoyed that. It's something I love doing. And is my day job. It's
yep.
how I earn my money. It's what I spend all my time doing. And then now I make my own music as well. But that's taken a long time to kind of reach that point.
That's pretty cool. Being an auto engineer, though, have you worked with anyone amazing?
Yeah.
Because that must be quite cool. You must have people that as well maybe could be their first time working in a studio.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we had the Play It Strange Awards earlier this week, and I work with Play It Strange quite a lot, so it's really cool to see them, like, students who are still developing, making music, and then also, like, my friends who are, like, you know, doing it every day, and, yeah, it's a cool variety.
Yeah, because it must be pretty scary for some of those young kids doing Play It Strange to kind of know what to do, or even how do you ask a technician to do something?
Well, that's, I think, part of the process for Play It Strange too. And it's cool for me as an artist. It's really making my own music and then having to explain to my collaborators what I'm actually after has really helped me as an engineer, because I can see it from that other side as well now.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what does training to be an engineer look like if someone's out there thinking about, you know, maybe not being a musician but wanting to do that? What does it look like?
There's kind of, you can go the tertiary route. So there's something like SAE does a course. You can do a little bit of audio stuff as part of the commercial music at Auckland Uni. Or there's other little, like, courses around the place. I was teaching a class at AUT for a while that was just Pro Tools, basically. So just some of the programs. Or you can go, like, the self-taught route as well. And, like, there's lots of master classes on YouTube and, like, programs overseas that you can look at online.
Do you find that more people now, you know, a lot of people that we interview that are making music are doing it themselves in their bedrooms?
Yeah.
So does that mean, has the job changed for you?
I think
working
so.
Working in a studio?
It's consolidated in that, like, one person can do lots of different roles now. But I still think, like, if you want something good quality, it's good to go to an expert. It's good to go to someone who's really crafted what they do. So a lot of the time people will maybe make demos themselves or get things to a point, and then they'll bring someone like me along to, like, finish it and get it up there.
Have you had the AI experience yet where someone's created something using AI, but then actually, you know, they may have written the lyrics themselves, but AI's created the music, and then they're now coming to you going, how do I record this?
I haven't had that.
That's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, well, I'm more part of the indie music scene, so we don't, that's not as
much
AI of a thing. Yeah. Actually, a lot of people do use AI to help with lyric ideas and stuff now. That's more so where I'd see it around me. And then I actually did like an AI course thing, and we used the music on that, and after using it, I'm not too worried.
Okay, that's cool. Time and a place for everything.
Yeah, totally.
So what made you go from writing music to one day saying, all right, now it's time for me to perform it myself? What was the switch?
So it was really, because I'm not actually much of I don't play live very much. I'm going to move into that. I think it was, I was interning at a big studio, and lots of people knew who I was and had, like, worked with me, but they didn't know what my musical perspective was.
Right.
Because I didn't have any of my own music out there. I was just working for other people. Because I have been a songwriter for so long, it felt like a natural step for me to put myself out there. And it was over COVID, essentially.
Really?
It was level 4. I got to take some of the equipment home from studio. I got to just muck around with it for a while and thought, actually, I will make this happen. So that was in 2020. Put my first EP out at the end of 2020, and then I slowly just kind of built my confidence and my capability and my style from there.
Do you ever listen to people you're recording in the studio and go, I'd like to pinch you for my next track? And like, you know, you could build a band, couldn't you, with different people that you're working
totally
with?
Yeah. And that's what ended up happening in this album and in my last album. And then in the new stuff that I'm making now is very much my friends who I've worked with who have thought, you make cool stuff, or I like the way you do this, or you have ideas that I think could be cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. And we're going to play a track in a second just to sort of get our audience teased into your music. What style, like, how would you describe your genre?
So when I made this specific album, it was a little triangle. It was indie pop in one corner.
Yeah.
It was what I like to call like cowboy, but I guess it's kind of folk essentially in one corner. And then just like a little bit dancey. Because I think previously my music's been very like down. So this was just more like a little bit more upbeat. And so all of the songs in the album kind of fit within that little triangle.
Dancing, indie pop, folk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cowboy.
Yeah. Okay. I quite like that.
It's a nice good mix. Yeah. It definitely conjures up an image in one's head.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us about this album you're working on, or you know, you've released tracks already.
Yeah, so the album that we're going to listen to songs from is called Move, and it came out at the start of November. I took about a year to make it and release it and everything. It was really much towards the end of last year, I released my previous album, Phases, and just felt this new inspiration. And I thought I was going to take a break from making music of my own. And then just all these songs kind of happened and I did all this collaboration. And so Move is a sort of snapshot of how I felt at the time of really coming into myself and feeling good about what I was doing and the direction I was going in.
Do you engineer your own tracks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't pass that on to someone else?
Yeah, well, hopefully one day I can, but it can be really hard to.
I can imagine. Yeah, yeah. It's your baby. It's your passion. Yeah.
Yeah, and because I'm so good at it. Like, I'm really fast. I can get exactly what I'm wanting straight away.
It's probably cheaper, too.
Oh, it's so, like, making music is very cheap for me.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. All right, we're going to listen to Lucky Star, first of all. Tell us about this track. What's this the inspiration?
I think it was me looking back at who I was as a music-loving teenager and looking at all the hopes and dreams that she had and all the problems in the world that she could see and sort of reflecting on, yeah, I guess like kind of my idols, my role models, and then how that inspired me and I guess how I can bring that into my life now with, you know, all the crazy stuff that's going on in the world and how my life is expanding. So that was, yeah,
nice.
Lucky Star.
All right, let's take a listen.
Sound.
What a great sound.
Thank you.
I know we're having a wee groove along.
Yeah, it's a good... Yeah, so now I go back to your describing the genre, dancing. Yes, we were moving. What did you say, pop?
Indie pop.
Indie pop, yes.
Yep, definitely.
Definitely.
The cowboy, I could kind of feel. Like while I was grooving, I was kind of thinking, I could boot scoot to this.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take it. We'll rate all of them, but that one ticked your triangle first up, which was great.
How do you find sitting here listening to your music being played or seeing people's reaction to it? Like, do you sit there watching what people are doing when it comes on?
It used to be really hard, especially when I first started, because I was so shy about it. But ever since my second EP, I've done listening parties for every release. And so that's really helped me out in terms of not really being worried about when people listen to it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea.
It's cool. It's fun. Nice to celebrate with people.
Yeah.
And stops you being nervous.
Yeah, yeah. And who else is involved in making this music? Like, who's playing the instruments?
Okay, so many people. That song... my friend Amy, also known as Hina, she played a bunch of violin and helped me write second verses.
Okay.
Because for some reason I can struggle with that sometimes. I had a bunch of collaborators who co-writers, so Arahi, my flatmate David, who's in a band called Le Owl, a guy, Jason, who does a lot of stuff down in Wellington. Right. I think I've forgotten
person. I threw you under the bus naming it. But that's cool. So I like the fact that it sounds collaborative.
Yeah, well, like, because I do all the engineering, I'm really comfortable with it. Like, it will sound like me.
Yeah.
So I try to make sure that my collaborator has their voice in there because it makes it more unique.
Nice. Yeah. And... flatmate in music as well in a band, so that's good. So you're well and truly living the music.
Oh, you
scene
have to
24/7. Yeah. Where would you like this to go? If we got you back on Kick Arts in 5 years' time, where are you going to be? What's happening?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I think I want to. I have vinyls for my albums, and I'd love, because like this is my craft, I want people to listen to things as the album, and so I want to like make my vinyls a thing that people really cherish. A few of my songs have gotten onto like TV shows and bits and pieces, so I'd love to keep doing that. I think especially some of my earlier EPs have a really big storytelling and like atmospheric element to them that really suit that medium. I'm at this stage, I'm keen to do like one headline show a year and just make it a bit of a kerfuffle, make it a thing. And then otherwise just keep enjoying myself. Make music that I think is cool, that my community enjoys, that people listen to and cherish. Yeah.
Who would you like to headline for? Who's the big artist that you would like to...
Oh, no, so, like, I would be the main person.
Yeah, yeah, no,
but,
I know.
Like, who would I open for?
If you were invited to open, who would really excite... Like, if someone walked through the door right now and said, we want you to open for, who would it be?
I don't even know. I think it would be more like I'd love to play, like, a big festival. So, like, a laneway or something.
Okay. So, rather than the person, maybe the event or the venue.
Totally. Yeah. I'm not... I think like a big festivals or like going overseas to do those big festivals. I like being a cog in a wheel, you know. I like, as an engineer, I like being one person who does something amongst other things. So, yeah, that's more me.
Cool.
When you talk about your songs being played on TV shows, were they sort of commissioned specifically for the show or did someone pick up your music and go, I want that on the show?
No, so it was, I got a whole bunch of my songs on Neighbours just before that stopped.
Wow.
So if you've been listening to Neighbours Neighbours in the past couple of months, my songs have popped up a lot. And then also...
That's cool.
The TV show The Ridge out on Neon. Mm-hmm. It's a New Zealand murder mystery.
Yeah.
One of my tracks is on that as well.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Neighbours, that's awesome.
That's so cool.
So does that mean you should play, you know, you... plugging the Australian radio shows to promote your music as well.
Oh, you know, I should be.
Yeah.
But people get busy.
Yeah. Yeah, get your publicist onto that. Come on, Nicole and team. Email Aussie.
Maybe as well being the music that's playing when the plane lands.
Mm.
You know, yes. That's I always quite interested to see when you land.
Because they finally start going, playing Welcome
what's
Home.
What's it going to be?
They branched out.
Yeah, yeah. That first year they did that. Honestly, every time they landed was Welcome Home. I was like, okay, got it. Yeah, no, but you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've actually picked up some really good music on planes, especially long haul, where you're kind of too tired to watch any more TV and you just bring up a playlist. And I've screenshotted on my phone to come back and look it up. That's a great, great way. There we go. We're helping you out tonight. So get your publicist, Nicole. You're now emailing New Zealand tomorrow. We can give you the contact after the show. Yeah, fabulous. Because it is all about getting it out there, isn't it? Like,
it's
a saturated market, so you've got to stand out.
Yeah, and it's also about, like, social media doesn't really do much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you kind of go to just get back in front of people in a real way?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the social media tends to be, you know, like a lot of the younger musos are, you know, using their TikToks and that. But they're not kind of using their TikToks to promote their music. They're kind of having to promote themselves.
Yeah.
Which is a kind of...
It's a different job.
Yeah. And I look at how many hours some of them are on their socials, and it's kind of like, where do you have time to create music if you're creating all this content as well?
Yeah.
And are they following...
And having a job.
Yeah. Job to pay the wages for everything. And are they following up their socials, or are they just doing the posts? Because do you know what I did yesterday? I had quite a few new music pop up, New Zealand and Aussie, on my Instagram. And I actually messaged saying, who we are from Kick Arts, love your track, if you'd like an interview or send us an intro to your music and our track. But so far, no one has replied. And it's like, come on, you got to monitor those socials.
Yeah, really do.
Yeah.
Mm, it's important.
Mm. But it's interesting how my feet's changed lately since, and it'll be because it's listening to us on this show, you know.
Oh, true.
You get really interesting things pop up. It's great. Mm. Music videos, is that something sort of next on the horizon?
Yeah, so I did one music video this year for a song called Love To Be. That was really, really fun. I got my friend Finn to CGI me riding a dolphin. So if you want to go watch a fun music video, it's called Love To Be. And then, yes, doing more of those. For my song Crush, we kind of did like a bit of a visualizer thing for that. So that was really fun.
Where does the dolphin fit in with the cowboy theme?
Love To Be is Love To Be is not on the digital album. It's only on the vinyl. So
okay, all right. We'll let you off.
Separate thing.
We'll let you off. All right, let's play another track. Yes. So The Orchard got released on November the 7th.
Yeah.
Tell us about this one.
So The Orchard is actually the closing track of the album.
Okay.
And I think it really sums up that topic of, I wrote it with my flatmate David at our flat. And it's really, being in that flat was one of the first times that, when you're flatting, it can really be really hard to feel like you're at home.
Mm.
Or like feel at peace with where you are. And that was a flat where I really felt that way. And so the song fully captures the feeling of that place. And we had lots of fruit trees, which is why it's called The Orchard. It was a nice send off for the album, I think.
Brilliant. All right, let's take a listen.
For the sun, now I pick the flowers on the lawn.
admit something, Em.
Yes.
I couldn't hear the cowboy in that one.
Oh, you know, this one is quite far on the other side of the triangle. That's okay.
That's all right. No, it's still another great track. We were just saying, sort of off air, there was almost an early Bick Ronga sound. That's a huge compliment because one of my favourite singers ever. Yeah. Really, that sort of vibe, eh? And some of her more relaxed tracks that she did, and I think second or third albums.
Very cool.
What do you draw from for inspiration? Like, if you were to leave here today, what's going to inspire you to write your next, other than obviously Emma and I, what's going to inspire you to write your next track?
I think for me, it's more, I just like get this feeling in myself of I need to express something.
Okay.
And I almost sometimes describe it like throwing up. Like, you can kind of feel there's like a little
itch coming.
Happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and you write the song and you're like, oh, I feel better.
Yeah. Do you have that at different times? Like, our artist last week said she often had it like in the car driving and would have to pull over and sing a voice note into her phone so that she could kind of let it leave her head and carry on driving.
Yeah.
Is that how you
decide? Yeah,
interesting.
Happens. Doing the laundry a lot, you know, hanging stuff up. And then sometimes it happens when I'm doing things for other people and I have to think, okay, after the session, I need to go write a song real quick.
That's cool. And now that you're creating the music for it as well, is it still lyrics before music?
It depends. Huh? At the moment, a lot of the time, it'll be music before lyrics.
Really?
But I know that a song has got legs when I already know the melody as the instruments are being created. So if we're making the instruments and I'm humming along something and getting a vibe straight away, then I know that that'll be a song that keeps.
Is it harder to fit the words into something you've created musically first? I would have thought the other way would be easier.
Not necessarily. I think they're definitely different skills to have. Because I don't necessarily know what the song's about yet. It's more like we'll start making the music and I will start thinking about something and then start humming some melodies and then words will happen to that. It used to be that I would do lyrics first, but now I kind of find, make an instrumental that feels inspiring and feels like it's going to go somewhere.
You said this took nearly a year to create this EP.
Yeah.
So are you already on the horizon of the next one? Have you started the journey for the next one?
Yeah. I've got maybe like 4 or 5 demos for that one.
Okay. And is that staying within this triangle idea of genre?
I think we're slightly different triangle. Okay. I think we're going to go a little bit more pop, but not in like really mainstream pop, kind of more, I don't know, I guess like UMO kind of land. And then I think keeping the folk in there, you've got to keep the indie in there. And then I'm figuring out what the other side of my triangle is at the moment. It's really good to be able to reference to, especially with session players. I had one session player that came in and played some great stuff, but it was like too Celtic and I had to say, no, more cowboy. So, you know, got to change it up.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
They both start with C.
Yeah. They're just very different feelings.
Definitely, definitely.
When you're in your day job, do you ever feel you need to influence someone because they've gone right off track musically? Do you ever listen to something and go, this just isn't going to work? Or is your job to try and make it work because it's their dream on the table?
I think it's about having honest conversations. Like, you definitely need to do that. But if you've set yourself up right at the start of the day and sort of know where you're going, it's kind of hard to even get into that position, if you know what I mean. Like, you sort of say, we're going to make the song like this, these are our references, this is what we're working towards. If they then kind of go left field and want to explore somewhere else, sometimes it's more of a case of, oh, like, that idea isn't actually this song, more so than like you've gone in the wrong direction for the song. It's like you've actually got a different idea that we'll just ballpark for a second and we'll work on this. Yeah,
that's cool. Any advice for somebody listening at home tonight that's sort of back in your early days, has written some songs and lyrics but haven't taken it to the next step?
I think find yourself collaborators. Find yourself people who like to play, who play instruments and who you trust and who you feel like know you, because I think that's so important, and who can work with you to develop your ideas into something that feels like it's still you.
I've got visions of them all jamming at their flat.
I know. Could you imagine what Saturday nights are like? What are your neighbours like?
We have like a bunch of new houses. We don't care about them, and then a road, so doesn't matter.
That's good
make
music.
As much noise as we like. Yeah, and they enjoy themselves, obviously, because it's fantastic music.
I love it. And it's better than, you know, who was that band we had not long ago where they said that their gear was set up in the storage unit? You know, and they were one of those stories where they roll up and they go and play in the storage unit.
But that was loud, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was loud. Yeah. It was a rock band who said they didn't want to annoy anyone, so they were kind of in an industrial storage unit.
So this EP is out now?
Yeah, the album's out now. Yeah.
Brilliant. So where can people get it, follow you, get all that sort of information?
So you can get it on Bandcamp, would be the main place I'd recommend. You can also get the vinyl there. Or if you find yourself further afield, you can also get the vinyl off Elastic Stage, which is my manufacturer for my vinyl. I don't know the URL for that off the top of my head.
Elastic Stage. That's cool. What a cool name.
So it's just M on Bandcamp. And then Melodramatic M, Melodrama, on Instagram is me. But if you're also interested in my audio stuff, it's Emily WS Audio on Instagram. And then you can find out everything at emilywsaudio.com.
Brilliant. Awesome. Well, we're going to finish the interview with the track Crush.
Yes.
What can we make of this one?
What's
the story behind Crush?
Let me think. What is the story behind Crush? I think the story behind Crush is sometimes, I think especially probably in your 20s, you maybe sometimes find yourself in a position where you kind of need to choose whether or not you're going to fall in love with someone. Maybe you meet someone and you kind of start dating and then sort of think, well, this was me at least. Would we have a better relationship as friends, or would we have a better relationship if we were together, and what would feel best and serve my life? Mm. And the kind of strength that comes with that kind of decision, but also the kind of sadness that comes with that as well.
Nice. Well, we appreciate you coming on Kick Arts tonight at short notice.
Thank you.
So cool to listen to your awesome music, and I hope you'll stay in touch and keep launching things with us. And when you finally got that live gig, let us know.
Yes, I will.
So we can give a good plug. We'll end with Crush. Thank you so much, Em, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
does. You know, it's fine. I'll take my time. So you don't take mine.
That is M with Crush. Fantastic. Could definitely hear that vibe in there.
Hey, so Stephen, this week I'm going to see a show on Wednesday night.
Brilliant. What's it all about?
Well, it's actually a fundraiser for someone that you've had in shows, one of your shows this year. So I thought, why not find out actually more about it from the person themselves?
Brilliant. Let's bring them on.
So, welcome to Kick Arts, Tova. Tell us a little bit about Wednesday night.
Kia ora. Wednesday night is a concert, a fundraiser concert for me to move over to Australia to do a Bachelor of Musical Theatre in Brisbane. And it features some of my old mentors and teachers, a lot of my friends and performers that I have performed with in the past. And the whole concert is kind of just going through all the shows that I have ever done. There's not a number from every show, so don't worry, it's not like 10 hours long. It's just talking about and touching on some of the most important shows of my life, doing a few numbers from those shows or numbers from people that I met during those shows. Yeah.
So what is the song that you are most looking forward to singing?
Mm. Oh, my gosh. Okay, probably, even though it's the hardest song out of all of them, to be honest, No Good Deed from Wicked, because the second movie just came out and I just watched it, and watching it on screen was insane, and hearing Cynthia Erivo's version of it was also insane. So I'm looking forward to singing that one, even though it's really hard.
And what are you most looking forward to about heading to Brisbane? And you had a good warm-up today with Auckland's heat of what it's going to be like, or what are you looking forward to?
I'm really looking forward to meeting new people, actually, because obviously it's a whole new country. I don't really know anyone there except for maybe two people. And also just doing what I love basically every single day. It's always what I wanted to do, and I can't believe that I get to do it every day, weekly, for 3 years.
Awesome. Okay, so tell us, how can people get tickets or come along and see the show?
If you want tickets, you can go and have a look at Centre Stage Theatre's website. There is a book now button, so if you press that, there's a list of all the shows that are coming up. I think it's towards the bottom where it says Concert for Tova. If you just press on that, you can choose your seats there.
Beautiful. So it's Wednesday night at 7:30?
Yes, 7:30 at Centre Stage Theatre in Orewa.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see you.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Jump online and support, team. Get online today.
We'll chuck it up on the Kick Arts event page as well, so you can find out all the information there. So jump over to kickarts.org.nz.
And we're always catching up with our fabulous, talented people over in Australia, so we'll look forward to chatting to you sometime next year, and we'll check in and see how it's going.
Yay! Can't wait. Thank you.
All the best. Now, we're delighted to get our next guest on the line. It is the fabulous author Jenny Lynch, who I guess is pretty well known for her time at the Women's Weekly. Welcome, Jenny.
Oh, thank you very much for talking to me.
Oh, look, it's lovely to talk to you. And your latest book, I'm so sure I'm going to pronounce this wrong, The Humiliation of Millicent Salmond.
Millicent Salmond.
There we go. See, and I said to Emma, I know I'm going to make this one up. tell us, what is it all about? Because it says tales of ambition, greed, love, and betrayal.
That's right. There's 22 stories in the collection, and they're basically stories of the unexpected, as you say, ambition, greed, love and betrayal. A lot of quite naughty people in the book, which is always very interesting, being that, you know, naughty people are often more interesting than those who are not naughty. So you were asking me about the first story.
Yeah, so tell us.
The one about Millicent Salmond.
Mm.
Well, a lot of the stories actually sort of come from some of my own experiences and also those of people I met during my long years in journalism, etc. And this is one of them. It's about a terrible dream. When I was very young, I used to have this wretched nightmare about all my teeth falling out.
Ooh.
And so in the story, Claude Salmond dreams that same dream, and he is absolutely devastated. His dreaming self can't imagine how ghastly he looks. And ghastliness is something very familiar to him because he's married to the terrible Millicent. And Millicent has him entirely under her thumb, and he longs for a way of getting out from under. And eventually, as the story unfolds, he does, thanks to the dream.
Interesting. Okay. Now, you said you've drawn a bit from your own life in these stories. How much do you sort of keep that balance of fictional and non-fiction?
Well, the thing is that when you're writing these stories, actually they don't seem to you to be fiction. They seem to be actually real. And I found myself getting into the heads of the various characters and thinking their thoughts and feeling their emotions. And so, to me, every story in this book is absolutely real. I know this sounds extremely weird, especially coming from someone who was a journalist all her life and was, not all her life, for certainly 30 years of it, and is used to dealing in facts. And so I really can't explain it, but as I say, everybody in this collection seems to me to be actually real.
Brilliant. I love it. Love it. So tell us, you know, as former editor of the New Zealand Women's Weekly, you know, what were some of those real career highlights that you look back on?
Oh, my Lord. It was actually a very difficult time when I took over the Women's Weekly. The circulation under the previous editor had fallen very much, and I was tasked with, with restoring some of the circulation. And I did to begin with, certainly. And one of the highlights, I know this sounds very mumsy and all that sort of thing, but was to run a knitting competition, an original design, any kind of wool that the contestants decided on, and any kind of garment. And they rolled in. You would not believe we had mountains of these various sweaters and things and so on. I had a picture of myself in the middle of them all. And that was my first real triumph. And I know it sounds terribly mumsy and so forth, but it really was a triumph. And I established myself as a friendly kind of editor chiming in with the readers and so on. And I had a wonderful response for quite some time. But then two Australian magazines suddenly came onto the market. And they were glamour magazines, Gossip and all the rest of it. And I suddenly found that our readers had quite an appetite for glamour and gossip. And so from then on, it was a really hard row to hoe. And I fought for what I believed in. Management fought me because they wanted me and the magazine to run head-to-head with the gossipy ones. And I was resistant. So from then on, it was really a hard row, as I say. And I was there for 7 years. And in the end, I was very, very glad to relinquish the editorship to my successor, who was Sarah Kate Lynch, who's somebody quite famous in her own right,
yeah.
a scriptwriter now. And people, it was very funny because people thought she must be my daughter, but absolutely no relationship at all.
Oh, that's brilliant. When I read your press release about your book, there was one bit that caught my attention. It said that you did a six-month adventure at Melbourne's The Playboy, a nightclub run by a shady underworld figure. What was this all about?
Exactly, exactly. I was Bunny Jenny. I wasn't actually a bunny in terms of the uniform, etc., but I was a bunny on the phone. And my job was to do a PR for the establishment and speak in an American accent, because American accents were very good for business, you see.
Wow.
And it was an eye-opener in very, very many ways. My boss indeed was a shady character. I was there for six months, and the week that I left, I learnt that, it wasn't the week that I left, it was several weeks after I left, I learnt that he'd actually been beaten up by a gangland character. He regarded himself as Mr. Big, and he was an SP bookie, a shady SP bookie on the side. And on Saturdays, I worked 6 days a week. And on Saturdays, he was in the office turning over his interest to his bookie interest. He had a tipster sheet, which was illegal, and it was Doc McKenzie's Wonder System. He didn't dare sign it himself, so I signed Doc McKenzie, Doc McKenzie, Doc McKenzie on all of these shady tipster documents. It gave me an incredible insight into just the slightly shady world of...
slightly. I think you've got so many stories that you could tell. Your next book needs to be about... It needs to be a biography.
Oh, I've done a memoir.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes, I did a memoir couple of years ago. It's called Under the Covers, and it's basically about my career in journalism with, a lot of these other things thrown in as well. I'm told it's a good read. It's done well in the library. I know that.
Great. So back to your writing today, have you got more books on the horizon?
No, I haven't at the moment. I have written a children's book, but I really do need an illustrator for it, and so far I haven't found the right illustrator. I've got in my mind exactly how the illustration should look and so on. So I'm just, look, after this one, I'm just going to have a bit of a rest and see whether I should pursue this or not. I've got a lot of other interests. I do public speaking and so on basically on historical type subjects. I do one subject every year. The subject this year was on the rise and fall of New Zealand, of Auckland department stores, which was particularly topical with the fall, of course, of Smith & Coe's, which was a great tragedy. And the one I'm preparing for next year is the history of the Kiwi Home kitchen and what came out of it from the early 20th century right up to the mid 20th century, and what amounted to a food revolution then. So that's one for my next year. After that, if I'm around and still kicking, I'm 87 years old now, so you can't plan too far ahead. But I do want to do one on poisonous cosmetics, which absolutely fascinates me, because through the years, people have unwittingly poisoned themselves by the things they put on their faces. And that's not just women, but men as well. So that's a fascinating subject I'm dying to get into.
Sounds like you've got your next few years sorted, Jenny.
Well, I hope so. I hope there are a few more years to get sorted, let's put it that way, because I'm 87 now. And people say to me, how in the hell do you you know all these things at your age, and I say to them, well, it's life experience, and I do think that few people could reach the age of mine without sampling a few rather interesting experiences. My husband thinks I've got an extremely devious mind. He was quite shocked when he read my stories, the 22 stories. But look, it's an extraordinary thing when you are writing like that. I mean, every story had something that kicked it off, that sparked it, you know. And then from then on, a plot took over. And I have absolutely no idea where they came from. None. They just took over from some part of my brain. I don't know how, but I've heard of other writers saying something similar, so it's just not me going quietly mad.
When you sit at home now and look, your husband's the former editor-in-chief of the New Zealand Herald, do you both, what's your sort of opinion, I guess, on where, I don't know if I want to say media, but things, you know, like the magazines and the stories and the newspapers these days have got to. I mean, I told a story a few weeks ago. My dad was the manager of Gordon and Gotch, who used to...
Oh, really?
Yes. Back in your day, was delivering and distributing all your magazines, and every Friday he would come home with a brown paper bag, and I would get all the cartoon books that had come out for the week, and Mum would get all the women's magazines that had come out that week. It was always a treat. With all the modern technology and social media and internet and all of that, what are you both feeling where this world has gone?
Well, it's not a very optimistic situation, really. We discuss it often, and we wonder really what's going to happen. Much depends on advertising, you know, for magazines. I'm more familiar with the magazines than newspapers. And I don't know. I'm just hoping like hell that we retain the physical magazines, because online is fabulous. But just having a book or a magazine in front of you so you can flick over the pages and have that contact, that physical contact, I believe is so important. I believe the New Zealand Women's Weekly at the present moment is doing very well indeed. I'm delighted about that.
Great. Brilliant. Oh, look, we could talk to you all night, Jenny. You've got so many stories, so hopefully you'll get back in touch when your next book comes out. In the meantime, where can people grab this one?
The bookshops. I always recommend the small independent bookshops because they need our support.
Yeah.
And the one in Mount Eden has been particularly good to us. And this is the woman's bookshop, and oh gosh, what's the other one? I'm just trying to think of the names of them. Let me think. Time Out in Mount Eden, the woman's bookshop in Ponsonby, and Unity Books in the city.
Yes,
they're small booksellers, and I think that they really need our support.
Absolutely. All right, go and support Jenny, grab her book. Thank you so much for talking on a Sunday night. I've got a fabulous person who's a wonderful children's book illustrator. I'll get her to get in touch with you. You might find your match.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Stephen.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jenny. Take care.
Thank you.
Wow, Emma, it's just so much knowledge there, eh? Like,
absolutely.
You could do a
stunning
whole night listening.
You sure
and
could.
Imagine getting a husband on as well to talk about his time in the Herald. Would be
we could
just
have
fantastic.
Family affair, yeah.
Yeah, fabulous, fabulous. Go and support, and as Jenny said, support those local books. So any bulletins coming up, Emma? Anything we need to know about?
Yes, so after a great NZIFF run, Notes from a Fish is now on its way to cinemas nationwide. Well, in fact, it's been out since the 2nd of December. This movie was made on a shoestring budget of $10,000 and was shot in 10 days with a small but mighty team. Co-directed by Romy Hooper, and it stars herself along with a huge number of Kiwi faves. Some of the names that jump out at me are Tom Sainsbury and Arlo Gibson, Morgana O'Reilly, Dan Waterson, Greta Gregory, and so many more. So this film is a cosmic comedy Odyssey with themes about artistic burnout and self-discovery. The NZIFF head programmer called it the sleepier comedy hit of this year's film festival, with multiple sellouts and encore screenings to meet demand. So it is on one more time in Auckland at Takapuna Beach Cinema from the 11th of December with question and answers. So, oh, it's also on at the Bridge. Sorry, I lied. This is when they kicked off. So you can check it out at the Capitol, Hollywood Avondale, the Academy, Vic Devonport, the Bridgeway or Takapuna. It's also playing in Hamilton, Whitianga, Wellington and Christchurch. So again, that is called Notes from a Fish. So go and see a movie that's maybe not about Christmas or not about witches or green and pink things.
Brilliant. Sounds great. Awesome. Sounds great. All right, time for a music break now. Here's a bit of Teddy Swims with his version of the Christmas song.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Tired carols being sung by a choir and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe can help to make the seasons bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that on his way, he's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to
Teddy Swims with the Christmas song. Check out the music video on YouTube if you want to look at Teddy Swims dressed up as Santa Claus, Emma.
Amazing. Well, now we're jumping down to Pocono. Not Pocono. Now I'm going to get the giggles.
Yeah, yeah.
We're jumping down to Wellington to check in with the man whose mother was a pirate, the musical. Now, we spoke to them earlier this year when they were doing a trial kind of workshop of this, and now it's in season at the Hannah Playhouse, and we've got on the line the pirate mother herself, Joanne Hodson, and the score writer, composer, Nino. Kia ora, guys.
Kia ora. Good evening.
Oh, we both spoke at the same time then. So, Nino, you've been back on for the last few days, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We opened on Friday this week, I think it was. Yeah, Friday.
Fantastic. And Joe, how's it been going, being back on stage?
Oh, it's just lovely. And the Hannah, formerly downstage, previously Hannah, it's just got such a special place in my heart. Not that I've ever performed there, but the family history with my brother Anthony being production manager there for years, and yeah, just really, really beautiful to be on that stage.
How many does it seat in there?
Nino might know that more than me. With a couple of hundred?
Yeah, I believe it seats around 230 is the maximum if you're including the balcony. Yeah, so it's a big theatre.
Yeah, and you've got a funky little set. I saw some pictures of it. Must have been on Facebook or something.
Yeah, it's a wonderful set by the wonderful Scott Maxim, who is a dear friend of mine, who worked tirelessly to build essentially a whole ship with some wonderful builders, Penny, James, and Liam, and they constructed it in a very short amount of time, and it's a wonderfully interactive set with props galore. Every 20 seconds has a new bit of ropes or artifacts, piratey or not, that we use within the show, and it's a wonderfully interactive set. It's really the final star of the show in this new premiere, this wonderful set within the Hannah Playhouse that we've been able to play with.
So tell us a little bit, Nino, what is different or what has changed maybe since we talked to you last when you were kind of doing the, it was more a workshop season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess we were trying to test out in the earlier this year in the previous workshop, what is how far can we stretch this show? What is the full parameters of it? So we tried lots of things with new songs, new forms of dramaturgy and narrative styles, and it was a much longer show, and we wanted to refine it down to being a little bit shorter and more accessible for young people, just to refine all things like story beats to make sure that it's quicker and more succinct, and with that as well, adding a more thicker orchestration. Previously, we had myself playing the bass guitar, Hayden Taylor, Beans Ryan, Andreas Lepper, all playing in the orchestra on piano, violin, and percussion. And now we've grown out to having more instruments like reeds, flute, accordion, mandolin, and a double bass player, Rachel and Bernard, who are adding to the orchestra. A wonderful addition. So I've had the great joy over the last several months trying to create an orchestration that feels immersive and exciting and true to the, I guess, the musicality of what you'd hope a seafaring cast would hear as they sing.
Mm. So, Joe, for you, tell us a little bit about singing this show.
That's so much fun. It's just, it's an absolute joy. Pirate Mother is rather chaotic. If you know the story, she's a pirate captain who ends up having a baby boy and lives the life of a mother, really wanting to just be at sea and trying to get him to go to sea forever and a day. and eventually they go on the adventure via their wheelbarrow. And it's just hilarious. You know, she's trying to figure out how to be a good mother, but she's pretty erratic at it. So there's a wonderful song that Nino wrote about breakfast for dinner, which has got egg shakers and egg boxes of Weet-Bix and all sorts of things going on in the during the song, a bit of a conga line, all that sort of thing. There's a mixture of that kind of funny patter kind of song, and then there's some beautiful ballads which really tell the story of life as a pirate, to try and get Sam to understand the world that she comes from and just how incredibly passionate she is about it. Yeah, it's multiple styles and delicious harmonies.
Very cool. I reckon, Stephen, that maybe we should have the pirate mother meet Captain Festus.
Oh, yes. They could have like a pirate
anthem.
Yeah, imagine it.
Joe and Nino may not know who Captain Festus McBoyle is, but he's a pretty famous pirate who travels around New Zealand. He does a lot of shows with Susie Cato.
I know that name, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a regular
on our show.
And his team are burlesque-style pirates. They're very cool.
Wow.
Yes, and they do amazing kid shows. So, anyway, tell us, Nino, then what was it like? I mean, you've just mentioned so many instruments that you've added in there. So tell us a little bit about your background for our listeners that enabled you to be able to orchestrate such a large amount of instruments.
Well, honestly, it all came down to the performers that we had and the collaboration that we made. I always knew that this work required some interesting instruments to make it really come alive. We've got harmonica solos that come in with a bluegrass style, Johnny Cash inspired like anthem for our farmer. But then I thought, for our philosopher, well, we need something that's a little bit more reedy or has something a bit stronger. And the wonderful Bernard Wells, who came on as part of the orchestra, we had a lovely chat in the early stages before I started orchestrating, or before I'd finished it at least, and said, what sort of instruments do you play? It's like, oh, well, I used to play the baroque. I'd play the baroque flute and recorder, but I'm also a guitar teacher, but I also really like dabbling the mandolin. Oh, I want to get more experience as an accordion player, but I also play this as well. And so it was like a treasure trove of instruments that I had at play. And so what we would do is we would have several chats and I would discuss the music and I'd say, well, this is the key and this is the feeling of the world. And the hardest thing really is to figure out with orchestration what instruments relate to what character. So for a pirate mother, she might have some funky bass line, as Breakfast for Dinner was mentioned by Joe, which is rooted in African marimba rhythms and polyphony, which I believe represents a pirate mother and her worldly travels. But then when you have like Sam and his boss Mr. Fat, who live in the world of politics and of progress and cities, I thought, well, a flute can be really interesting. I sort of imagine like the industrial sound of flutes in factories, and also like the sleuth and slime that can come when representing a character who is manipulative, as is Sam's boss. So it became fully collaborative. What do we have as a resource? What can we play with? And this is my first orchestration, so the collaboration was key in figuring out what sort of sounds we had, and it grew throughout the rehearsal process. So it all really came from the wonderful performers that we had collaborating on the show.
How fantastic. Have you thought that next steps might be to record a cast album?
Well, we're actually sort of already doing that a little bit with the time that we have in between, and our wonderful sound designer Ollie Devlin, who does all the sound design for all of us throughout the show. And we sort of discussed, well, we're here, let's record ourselves live and let's record some little bits and pieces. So obviously the hope for the show is that it doesn't stop in Te Whanganui o Tara, that we can hopefully have it sponsored within Auckland or Christchurch, or tour it in some way, or even take it to the UK. The idea to have a cast recording of our original cast that we have for this opening premiere would be the ideal to help grow interest in the show.
That would be so cool. Very cool. Now, Joe, probably not just yourself, but a lot of your cast will have probably be doing this around day jobs as well. So what's it like juggling everything at the moment?
That's actually been an interesting thing that's happened this time, is that when we did the development season in January, I was on summer break from my teaching, and I definitely found the focus of just doing the show was certainly easier. This time, you know, navigating the end of year teaching and concerts and all that sort of thing, the brain has been slightly more scattered. And it's been an interesting process to go, right, you know, change hats, get back into it. So even though I'd done it in January and other cast members were learning it for the first time, we've all had to just really, really knuckle down and really help each other out to learn the shortened version, integrate the new cast members, the new musicians, and while also integrating into a whole new space on an actual set with the lights and the microphones as well. So it's been a whirlwind of really only about 3 weeks.
Mm. Awesome. So you've still got... I'm just having a wee look at the calendar here. You've still got a couple more shows to go.
Yeah, we have seven more shows from Wednesday all the way to the 14th of December. Yeah.
And so this is, I mean, it's a family fun musical, but it's good for everybody.
Yeah, that's always the hard sell for a show, is that it's obviously a classic New Zealand story for children. But what really connected me when I first read the book is that I felt like Sam. I felt like myself as a 27-year-old artist trying to figure out their way in the world, is how do you compare the life that is taken with risks and going to the seaside and one that is spent in the office trying to build a sustainable career. I think it's a story for everyone. There are a lot of jokes that are there for adults, for everyone, and it is inspiring for Tamariki as well. But I'd like to hear Joe's perspective on that as well, what you think on that.
Oh, it's absolutely for everybody. I mean, the response in the auditorium, and also afterwards, we've got a bit of a photo booth happening in the foyer, so that I've been going down, and then some of the other pirates have been going down and having photos with the kids afterwards, and the comments are beautiful. I got given a picture today by an audience member, and she said it was her jumping into the ocean with a life jacket on and a pirate. So, and there's been several who have come dressed up. And the comments, I mean, I don't know whether you saw the review that's come through from Theatre View. So there was a theatre tutor here from Wellington often reviews the children's shows around the city with her two children. And the comments from a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old in that review on Theatre View is just absolutely priceless. And because there's lots of interaction with the audience at the beginning of the show, one of the comments was, I liked how the old man the philosopher Avery Ward was so funny. He was like, quiet, I'm trying to focus on my I can't remember. And that's in the review, you know. So it's just really fascinating what children take away from a show like this, that it has got, it's very clever, there's a lot of words in it, but there's absolutely enough for children to really see the joy and the adventure inside.
And there was one particular audience member who came to our show today, because we performed a show this afternoon, who was very, very excited. I remember, because the ushers told me they came like 30 minutes early to get good seats, and they said to us afterwards that they used to read The Man Whose Mother Was a Pirate to their kids, who are now 30, and now she gets to take her grandchildren to see this show. And for me, it's a privilege to have a story to share that is across generations and connecting to people and still enjoyed today. And that has been a great privilege to be able to share with an audience that has a strong relationship to this story.
Lovely. And you've got your shows are at 6:30 start, so that means it's not too late in the evening for kids coming either.
Yeah, so 6:30 start in the evenings, but we also have matinee shows on the Saturday as well as the Sunday. So I believe we've got 3:30 p.m. or 3:30 p.m. on Saturday, 2:30 on Sunday as well, which are all doing quite well. And we've actually got a special school show on Thursday, where we've got Mount Cook School and Rosny School, which is in walking distance of Hannah Playhouse. We've got 150 kids that are going to be coming to that show, and I couldn't be more excited. That's to have and then full theatre of children singing their hearts out.
Brilliant. So where can people go to get tickets?
They can go search through the Hannah Playhouse, or they can search on Event Finder, and they search up The Man Whose Mother Was a Pirate. They will the musical, they'll be able to find all information on Event Finder there. And tickets are $40 for adults and $15 for kids. And we, with all the amount of stuff that we've packed in, it's 100% worth the ticket price. And we want to make sure as many families and adults can come along. And it's not just for the young tamariki, for teenagers as well. We highly recommend that people come in and book soon.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for coming on to Kick Arts on a Sunday night after you've been performing this afternoon. And we wish you all the best for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Emma. Thanks, Stephen.
All right. Take care, guys. Time now for a music break. Here's Park Roads, the latest track, The Way I Feel.
You're too pretty to count things straight. Watch me overdo it, imagining you in the passenger seat. When I'm driving home and it's late, and I try so hard to be a bad boy that don't give a fuck. Can I walk around with a heavy head? I'm finding it hard to keep it up. On my chest out, my ego fit. Someone else laying in my bed. I don't know why, but it's all too much. I'm finding it hard to find someone that I feel the way I feel about you. About you, girl, that I feel the way I feel about you. About you, girl, the way I feel about you. Remember hanging out, we were the leads in a romance scene on a bowling green after hours. Put your hand on my chest, told me it's a place that you can't get hit, otherwise you lose the match. And I try so hard to be a bad boy that don't give a fuck. Can I come home to an empty house? I'm finding it hard to sleep you up, and I never leave this.
see the sun. Act tough like a hired gun. I don't know why, but I stole too much. I'm finding it hard to find someone that I feel the way I feel about you. About you, girl, that I feel the way I feel about you. About you, girl, the way I feel. Outside your car, tucked in your frocks, painted your cheeks, but now you act like you don't know me at all. Oh, I'm ashamed. It was a time when I saw your eyes all in the time, but now you act like you don't know me at all. Oh, I'm ashamed that I feel the way I feel about you. About you, girl, that I feel the way I feel. About you, girl, that I feel the way I feel. About you, girl, that I feel the way I feel. About you, girl, the way I feel.
The way I feel. And if you check out their music video on YouTube, one thing I noticed, Emma, since we met them a while back, they're getting older. It's funny watching these videos.
It's funny how people grow up.
Can't stop that. What have you got on this week?
Well, Wednesday night we're going to see Tuva's fundraiser, and then other than that, it's pretty calm, which is great. I'm really excited about finally having a bit of a down week to do some admin and get on with my house cleaning.
And Christmas shopping, has that started?
It has started a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I had to sort of make that commitment to get going.
Yeah, I fell into a shop and bought something for myself, yeah.
Now, if you've got something coming up, make sure you email us, info@kickarts.org.nz. We're starting to look nice and full now through until nearly the end of January. A few little slots if you've got something coming up. But also, you can email us and we will read out your bulletins if we can't get you on air. Auckland Theatre lists come out. The same ones are out this week. Don't forget, Sinbad the Sailor is still running. And Austin Found, The Undiscovered Miracles of Jane Austen. Christmas Carol's on at Civic Theatre. And, of course, lots happening with our friends at The Basement, who we caught up with a few weeks ago. Still lots happening at Basement and Q. Still rocking up right through to Christmas. Tickets are out now for, of course, the Rocky Horror Show and Heather's the Musical, two professional UK tours hitting New Zealand next year. Although someone said today the Rocky Horror prices are pretty pricey, so watch that one. Might be a good Christmas present, though. Perhaps theatre tickets is a Christmas present as well.
Well, definitely. And the Australia-New Zealand tour of Heather's tickets are actually very reasonably priced.
Right.
You know, $69 and $89, which isn't too bad for a touring show.
Mm. Guess what a lovely friend at work gave me for Christmas.
Don't tell me you got Josh Groban tickets from a friend at work.
No, they didn't hear this show, but they got two tickets to MJ in Melbourne for me and my daughter to see when I go over in the new year.
Oh, how exciting.
I'm excited.
That's such a good show.
Looking forward to that. But yeah, lots on. Check out Auckland's Theatre List for more information and, of course, our fabulous bulletin page on kickarts.org.nz.
Yay.
All right, time to close the show with, of course, a Christmas song. It's a Louis Armstrong cover by Emmeline, and it's called That You, Santa Claus. Have a fabulous week. We'll catch you next week. Make sure you go out and
kick some ass.
Gifts I'm preparing for some Christmas sharing, but I pause because hanging my stocking, I can't hear a knocking. Say, is that you, Santa Claus? Sure is dark out, ain't the slightest spark out on my clacking jaw. Who's there? Who is it? Stopping for a visit. Say, is that you, Santa Claus? Are you bringing a present for me? Something pleasantly pleasant for me. Is it just what I've been waiting for? Would you mind slipping it under the door? Cold winds howling, could that be growling? My legs feel like straw. My, my, oh me, my, kindly would you reply? Say, is that you, Santa Claus? Slipping it under the door. Cold winds howling, could that be growling? My legs feel like straw. My, my, oh me, my, kindly would you reply? Say, is that you?
Your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep.